Welcome to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparables podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty and joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Hi, Scott. I am the Guardian of Forever.
You don't sound like him.
I am the Guardian of Forever.
All right, there you go. That's better.
Thank you.
That was one of my favorite moments in the episode, was them using the sound from the original series for the Guardian of Forever. Spoilers alert,
for the episode we're talking about.
I guess
Giorgio goes to the past at the end. See, regret not watching before or listening.
She was a ghost.
I find it charming that there's a ghost all along. I find it charming that at the beginning of the Ready Room every week, Will Wheaton says laboriously for several minutes, really, we are going to be talking about the episode that aired this week. You should watch that before you watch this. And they put up a spoiler alert. And I'm like, wow, I guess people are really dumb. Like, a new episode of Discovery? I'll watch The Ready Room first.
Well, you know, maybe you're not familiar with The Ready Room is. You want to see the Michelle Yeoh interview before you see the episode. And I will say, listeners, dear listeners, I have stopped saying spoiler alert as much as I did previously, because I got some feedback that people said, you know, we've watched the episode.
Now we'll warn you if we're going to talk about the next time trailer or if we have potentially spoilery conspiracy thoughts, but that's it.
That's it. We assume you've watched the episode. The episode in question, of course, Discovery Season 3, Episode 10. Episode 10 already.
I know.
Terra Firma. Part two. And I always forget how many episodes are going to be in this season. Only 12. So we are, no, only 13.
13.
13.
Lucky remember that 13. First season where they didn't know what they were doing and they made two extra episodes? Good times. Good times.
They were like, uh-oh.
Oh, no. Can we have more episodes, please? Not this time.
Nope. We just got 13. And I don't know about you, Jason, but the season is going by very quickly.
It really is. It really is. It feels like a whole season of The Mandalorian has happened in the middle of this Discovery season, because it has.
It has. How many episodes of The Mandalorian are there?
Eight.
What? That's
once
too
again,
short.
Star Trek is shown to be superior to Star Wars, numerically.
No. It's true. The Mandalorian, though, is also a fine show.
We are living in
the golden age of science fiction.
We are. I watched The Expanse yesterday.
Oh,
The Stand came
that.
Out. There's so much going on in terms of TV stuff. It's great.
There was a time, Jason, and you know this well, that there was a slim pickings.
There was a time when we watched Buck Rogers because it was about all there was. And I want to say we liked it. We did not like it, but we watched it.
Beady, beady, beady.
Man, well done.
Ate some lizards. Everybody was happy.
Aaron. That was a thing.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You can, nerds who watch TV in the late 70s and early 80s can list... literally can list the shows because there were so few of them. But like, remember those 3 days in 1982 where V was on? Because that was about it. That was all there was for a long time.
Do you think that these streaming services seem to be desperate for content, which is a good thing because they're you know, making more science fiction, and a lot of it is good. A lot of it is bad, of course, I'm sure. But do you think that we will see a reboot of Buck Rogers?
Oh, boy, I hope not.
On Peacock.
No, I mean,
coming
the funny
2021.
Thing about, that's the funny thing about what, the era we lived through. Boy, this is the most tangential Vulcan Hello ever, but I love it. It's great. We lived through the era where Star Wars was a big hit. Mm-hmm. And as giant entertainment conglomerates will do, they said, what intellectual property do we own or can we license cheaply and turn into a quick, crappy thing that's kind of like Star Wars? And so what they did was they took all those serials from the 40s and brought them back. So we got Buck Rogers and also the Flash Gordon movie, right? There was definitely a trying to find... And meanwhile, Glenn Larson stepped forward and said, I have an idea called Battlestar Galactica. Instead of being based on a radio serial from the 30s, it's based on the Book of Mormon. And they said, if it's got lasers and robots, you can have our money. So it was a weird time. It was a very strange time. But I do wonder sometimes about what other old intellectual property is getting unearthed in order to be fed into the cruel streaming media machine.
Oh, dear. Someone out there is working on a Buck Rogers reboot, which, by the way, I said Peacock jokingly, but apparently Buck Rogers was a Universal property. Comcast owns Universal.
They may not have the underlying license for Buck Rogers, which is probably owned by some weird company that bought the rights from the people who made it in 1940. But yeah, that would make sense. Yeah, sure. I don't know, bring it back. But if you're going to bring it back, you got to have Tweaky and Dr. Theopolis or New
Deal.
That's
true. I don't want it. If you don't have a robot that you wear as a necklace,
I know.
I am not interested. No,
it's not just a robot you wear as a necklace. It's a robot that you wear as a necklace if you're a different robot. That's the best part. Is it's one robot who wears a second robot as a necklace. That's the best. Oh, the 80s were something. Man. Oh. Good. Anyway,
now, imagine in Terra Firma 2.
I'm going to make a Star Trek reference too. Imagine if they had made that Star Trek Phase 2 show in the late 70s. Like,
oh boy,
we would all have to deal with like, oh, it was the 70s, and they didn't make it.
Dodged a bullet.
Okay. It's okay. There were
frankly
just the motion picture. We only have to explain the motion picture,
which has its high points.
It does. It does.
But we're not here to talk about any of that. We should probably talk about
What show is this again?
Vulcan Hello. We're going to talk about Terra Firma Part 2, which I'm going to continue our new tradition of saying up front, I enjoyed this episode. But it's very straightforward. I mean, I don't know why there's a but in that, but it's a straightforward episode. What did you think?
I agree. I actually think that in the old days, they might have actually shown this as a 2-hour special. Because it feels to me very much like one story, which is good because I hate it when there's a two-parter and it's really not a two-parter. It's sort of like a fake two-parter. This has got, because of the conceit that was, I thought, pretty clear last week where we didn't see anything that happened after Giorgio entered the portal, that all of this was going to happen in a moment in terms of our time, this whole thing. And we find out that Giorgio lives through 3 months in this episode. So, as a whole, it structurally, it's kind of nice. You've got your first half where it's like there's the part on in real time. Then there's the middle where there's like an hour of Giorgio in the mirror universe. And then there's like the last half hour where plot lines advance for future episodes and things like that. And I feel like as a whole, that might be a better way to watch this is to see the whole thing, because instead we get the Terran stuff kind of like cut in half. But I like it. I liked this digression. I think seeing the mirror universe is fun. I wouldn't want to see it a lot, but it's a nice thing to see a little bit of and to see how it reflects on our characters. Like, I think the mirror universe is a character exercise, right? Like, and obviously the producers of the show do too, because that's what they used it for, is who are the opposites of our characters? What facets of our actors and our characters can we see in this alternate portrayal of them? But it also is very clear, if you were thinking about the character arcs of this episode, you're like, I know. I had a moment where I'm like, well, we all know what's going to happen, right? Like, not in one of those, like, I'm calculating the plot. Like, literally, at one point, about 10 minutes in, I thought, well, clearly Giorgio is going to find out that she has spent too much time in the Prime Universe and that she's seen all the ways that the Terrans are stupid and she's going to try to change it and it's going to fail. And she's going to ultimately either kill Michael or be killed by Michael or both. And then she's going to return to exactly the moment that she left and realize that she can't go home to the Terran universe. So her only alternative is to go back in time to where she left from, basically, last season, so she can be on a TV show. And I knew that about 10 minutes in. But it was okay, because, again, it's all about the character. That's the point. But I thought it was really funny that you could figure out the plot based on obviously what the character needed to go through.
Yes. I mean, there were no great surprises in this episode.
I kind of like that, because that's sort of the point, right? The point is that she thinks she can change things, and she can't.
And we know she can't.
She can't.
No. She's changed, and that's the whole point also, right? She has changed. She herself is a different person, which I think is important because, as we've said numerous times, Georgiou is an entertaining character, but very one note at the beginning, right? And you can't build the whole show around that one note character. She works well as kind of walking in, saying something quippy and then walking out. You need to give her a little more depth.
I have a theory. So one problem I had with this episode, and it's not actually with this episode, it's with the work done to lead to this episode, is I'm not entirely convinced that Giorgio has had an arc where she's learned and grown as a person since she's been in the Prime Universe. I think the implication is that although she doesn't show it, she has changed. But exactly. I think the problem like is, as a viewer, I need to see more. I'm not entirely convinced that I've seen as much growth as is revealed in these episodes. I like the growth that's revealed in these episodes. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure they laid the groundwork as much as they could have.
I think that's true, because they I think that as a writer, I assume that you just can't resist making Georgiou be kick some people in the face and have some quips.
And quips! Oh, man, the quips. They're so good.
Which are all great, and I love them, but it doesn't serve the character if your thought is, well, let's try to, you know, make her more complex and have this big thing.
Since this is the holiday season, it's kind of brilliant because this is kind of a Christmas Carol. It's a Wonderful Life kind of thing where she sees her old life and realizes that it's no good and that she has learned from the new universe that it is better. Even though she's the Emperor of the Terran Empire comes to our universe, the Prime Universe, and goes, oh, this is actually better than that one is. It's the Agonizer. It's not good. No, you don't need an Agonizer. And yeah, I got some ideas because I used to be a dictator, but generally you are better off than those people are. Like, that's all good. I just feel like I'm not convinced that we really got to see a lot of character development in Giorgio up to this point. And knowing, and again, there's nothing, what can you do about this? We know that they want to make a show with her, a Star Trek spinoff with Giorgio as the main character. And that's great. Michelle Yeoh is amazing. And you're lucky to have her and for her to be enthusiastic about this. And every week you can have her kick people and stuff, and it's awesome.
And I'll watch it.
But watching, knowing that, I watch this episode and I think, a couple of things. I think one, this entire two-part episode is structured to get, it's written first off by the writers who are apparently show running her show. So it feels very much like a backdoor pilot. It is literally, we need to get her out of this show and into our show. I'm a little surprised that she doesn't appear somewhere and there's like a tantalizing clue of where she's gone. But there is that line that happens that's like the Guardian of Forever, which we'll get to, says something like, boy, you have a lot of adventures ahead of you. Like, stay tuned for that show.
I could serialize them and watch them together.
On a view screen of some sort. So, you know, but so knowing that, it makes it a little bit tougher to grade this and to sort of like know how I'm supposed to feel about it naturally, because I can see that they're trying to get her to her destination. And maybe also a little bit the writers are like, how do we make her less of a one-note character and more like, because in the show we want to do, she needs to be a little bit softened from the Emperor of the Terran Empire. So we really need to have it clear that she's repudiated that and is making her own way in the world. And that's the heavy lifting that this episode is doing. And I think it actually does a pretty good job of it. It's just kind of hard for me to disconnect my knowledge of the fact that they're doing these things, and that this is a problem I have occasionally with Discovery, is I enjoy it as a show, but there are moments where I think, I know why you had to do it, and it takes a little bit away, because I know that I can see what the assignment was for this episode, right?
You can see the gears turning, and they're pressing the sequence of buttons to get what they need.
What they need, right. Just like last season where they were like, we need to get out of the old part of the canon. So the whole Red Angel thing was really just a way to eject them out of the past of Star Trek and get them somewhere fresh. And it was an okay story, and there were a lot of great details in it. But in the end, it also felt like it was the brief. Like, they were really just fulfilling the brief of the season. And this this two-parter, as much as I did enjoy it, is also very clearly fulfilling a brief.
Yes, I think that's absolutely right. And it's difficult to, as we've discussed, Michael Burnham is the main character of Discovery, right? And so it's difficult to give any of the other characters quite enough time. You have a lot of characters on this show, as you do on any Star Trek show. So it's worse
on this show, right? Because you have your ensemble, and then you have your bridge crew, who is not in this show is not your ensemble.
So it's like double.
So you end up with like 14 characters. Yeah.
And it's hard to give each of them their due.
Right.
And one imagines Michelle Yeoh has time commitments and things. I don't know
sure.
how it all works. But
she's very busy.
So I could see the difficulty. And I do agree with you that it's kind of they stuffed really all of the character development into this two-parter. A lot more of it in this part, I think, than the previous part. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they're setting up this part. But I did think it was successful given that. I would like to have seen it spread out a little bit more
right.
over the season. But I did enjoy this two-parter. And she's a lot of fun. And so, and it's so straightforward, really. And I don't mean that as a criticism. It's just that it starts exactly where the episode, previous episode ended. Maybe not exactly. It starts with Michael Burnham being thrown into the brig,
yeah,
which was a command that ends the last episode.
Yeah, basically you could edit this together as a little TV movie if you wanted to do a little two-part. Because they do continue right after one another, which I think is fun. But yeah, Michelle Yeoh's character, like, it's a she early in part one, she does a lot of things that humanize her because it turns out you need to have all of those things. And mm-hmm. I agree, it would have been nice to spread that out a little bit more. But this is what we ended up getting, and it's right. fine. Again, it's fine. I don't have a problem with it. It's just that it does feel
a little uneven.
I can feel the strings being pulled, I guess, which makes it feel a little more artificial. And I wish I didn't have those, you know, those feelings. But it's definitely there. Also, I want to give them some credit. The truth is, making a TV show is hard because mm-hmm. you have production issues and corporate issues and actor issues and availability things. And I actually, we didn't get Jason Isaacs in this episode. And it's one of those sad things where I think they must have wanted Jason Isaacs in this and couldn't get him for some reason, right? Like, in fact, there is that guy they find on that shuttlecraft, and it's like, this is supposed to be Jason Isaacs. And they had to change it because they couldn't get him. So I'm sympathetic because I think Giorgio wasn't supposed to be in season 3 of Discovery. She was supposed to go. They were supposed to produce her show in the gap between season 2 and season 3 of Discovery. And for whatever reason, I don't actually know what the reason is, they put it off. And they said, we're going to do it after season 3 of Discovery. And so they didn't want to leave Michelle Yeoh like not being connected to Star Trek for that year. So they put her on the bridge. They put her on the ship going into the future. And then they need
to just in the future.
And then they need to take two episodes of the next season to unwind that decision and get mm-hmm. her back out, which, you know, again, was that a good decision or not? I don't know. But I get the feeling like it was a decision that they had to make. And then the writers are also kind of like, all right, now we have to unwind that. And how do we get out of this? And they did it. And again, I think they did it pretty artfully. I think this is a really nice character piece about Giorgio and twist kind of invertedly about Burnham because it's the mirror universe. But I think like mm-hmm. that there is, it's funny because, you know, mirror Michael Burnham is who she is. But I think through how Giorgio reacts to her in this episode, you are seeing in every reaction her comparing her to prime Michael Burnham. And so mm-hmm. it is a Burnham episode, even though mirror Burnham isn't ours, because in Giorgio's eyes now, she's judging her, right? She's like, you're not like the good Michael at all. You're very bad. Why aren't you learning things like she does? Why aren't you growing as a person like she would? You're very disappointing to me.
It's true. I know you have it in you. And that's the thing, right? Giorgio is like, I have seen a better version of you.
Yeah.
And I can make it happen. And I think that's interesting, too, because of her, she's true to her character. The way she acts in this episode and the previous episode is true to her character, but gives her more, like, it more nuance, right? So she says, I see what could be here, and I see what the Terran universe could be, and I am going to make it that because I can do that.
Right. I can do what I want. Yeah, it's
turns out you can't.
We see the mirror universe sometimes, and we're like, "Boy, these people are dumb. Like, it's so wasteful." and so it's kind of fun to have Giorgio go back there and be like, "Well, I'm the Emperor, and I've seen the Prime universe, and
we'll be like that,
and it's better. So why don't we do that?" And the answer is, "Sorry, we don't do stuff like that here. This is a dumb universe.
This is dumb, and we're going to kill you."
Yeah, which is a lesson you got to learn, I guess.
Well, you only learn it once, Jason.
Well, not if you're riding with the Guardian of Forever, you don't.
Oh, that's true. He's a good person to have.
Thanks, Carl.
As your co-pilot. Yes, Carl.
Shout out to Carl.
You guessed it. Full points to Jason for guessing that Carl was the guardian of Forever. Which I know I said that I was hopeful that Carl was just Carl, an unexplained cosmic force. But I didn't really think that it would just be Carl.
Right.
So I am happy because the Guardian of Forever is a fun thing
to show up. Deep original series lore, City on the Edge of Forever, one of the great hours of television maybe ever made. Really, like, it's easy to like take TOS stuff and be like, yeah, okay, whatever, old TV. And it's like, no, City on the Edge of Forever is an amazing piece of work. Like, Harlan Ellison and the rewrite by Dorothy Fontana, it's great. It's an amazing piece of work. And it has, I looked it up. She did reuse it. Dorothy Fontana used it in Yesteryear, which is the one canonical episode of the animated series where Spock goes back in time to prevent himself from being killed so that he can continue to exist. She actually used the Guardian Forever in that. This is the only time other than those two that the Guardian of Forever has ever been used. It was sort of, I actually kind of wonder if while Harlan Ellison was alive, if nobody really wanted to like tempt from Harlan, but,
have to pay him millions of dollars.
But I think the usage here is cool. It, you know, they had the wink to it last time with the newspaper, which is the same newspaper. It turns out I even missed one of the references last week because the newspapers that Kirk and Spock record on the Guardian of Forever and are playing back when they're back in the past is that newspaper that he's reading.
It's Star of Dispatch.
Yeah, it's actually the same newspaper. So deep references there to say that this is the Guardian of Forever. But I like the take on it where it's a very Doctor Who thing. Like I said last week, it's sort of mystical and weird and he's not answering questions, but that's very Guardian of Forever. and that moment where he says, I am the Guardian of Forever, and he suddenly speaks with the voice from that episode, and we see the big donut thing that goes through time. I thought that was awesome and fun. I'm not sure it needed like a swirly Doctor Who vortex, but it had it, so I'll take it. And very nice tying it in. So Enterprise established that there's this temporal war happening.
Yes.
And in this season, they've been talking about the 29th century or whatever, temporal wars. So in this episode, what we get is the Guardian of Forever saying basically the universe, you know, the galaxy went mad. They used me to fight this war. It's no good. So I left, basically. So like I hid myself away somewhere where people couldn't find me, except the sphere data. I don't really understand how the sphere.
Yeah, it extrapolated. It knows where it was.
It could look for the time ripples or whatever, but I thought it was a fun thing. It wasn't necessary, but like literally you're tipping your hat at the like most famous episode of Star Trek basically by doing this. Why not?
Yes.
Why not do it? And since you've got time travel already involved and this whole idea of like time travel is really bad and we don't do that anymore, the fact that the Guardian of Forever is like, yeah, that was me. It was really bad. I like that.
It was not good. Yes, I enjoy that. I like the line, something Carl says something about, you know, in the old days you just go through and promise not to make too much of a mess and it was fine.
In my day. But they ruined it. They ruined it.
They ruined time travel.
Yeah.
And I will say, I can't imagine anyone who's listening to this episode has not watched The City on the Edge of Forever. But if you have not watched The City on the Edge of Forever, go watch it.
It's so
even if you don't like the original series, just watch it.
It's so good. The comic book adaptation of Harlan Ellison's original teleplay is also very good. If you haven't read that, They did a sort of like what would the original screenplay have looked like if it had been produced comic a while back that you can get.
I have not read that.
On Comixology and stuff like that. And it's interesting because like in that script, the Guardian of Forever is like the Guardians of Forever, and they're these like 10-foot tall like statue alien things. It's very and they couldn't afford that. They could only build the donut. So they like, well, we're not going to do that. And it was supposed to be a city, and instead it's like some ruins, some pillars. Because they had no money. But the TV show, that episode, it's so good. William Shatner is so good in it. Joan Collins is so great in it. Yes. And it also puts the lie to this whole public conception of Captain Kirk as this Lothario. Because that is a story of Captain Kirk falling in love and having his heart broken. And the end is just, it's such a brutal ending. I love how tough the ending is, because he's lost everything, because he's had to allow terrible things to happen to the woman he loved because of time, because time travel sucks. And it's just, it's great. It is an amazing standalone piece of TV. So yeah, if you haven't gone back to TOS, The City on the Edge of Forever, please do. Also, you'll see The Guardian of Forever.
Yeah, and you'll know that you'll know why Edith Keeler must die.
Yeah, and that donut grows up to be Carl.
Yes,
it does. Turns out that's the beauty of building on canon.
That's right. And so we spent a lot of time in the Mirror Universe in this episode. Yeah. You know, a lot of people are, you know, chewing the scenery
inspiring.
In Mirror Universe ways. It's people are dying. There's Michael Burnham is being tortured until she says, okay, I still love you, Emperor Giorgio. But big reveal, she doesn't.
Yeah.
And it was all a lie, which, yeah. You know.
It seemed pretty clear, right?
Surprising.
I was deeply skeptical. I'm like, yeah, oh yeah, she's fine now. I'm sure it's fine. Yeah.
And I think that works because I think that Giorgio wants to believe it.
Yep.
And so refuses to see the obvious signs that she is being played by Michael. And so I don't think this episode was meant to have any, other than perhaps the Guardian of Forever, any kind of giant, like, oh my goodness.
Moments. No, there's definitely a feeling of inevitability about everything that happens. That's the story, is that she is trapped by the, you know, the place that she's from, that she can't really affect change. That Giorgio, for all of her bluster and I'm the emperor and all of that, she does not have the power. Even the emperor of the Terran Empire does not have the power to change the Terran Empire.
Nope, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And it ends in the brig with Giorgio killing Michael Burnham, and Michael Burnham
stabbing,
killing, it seems, but probably. Maybe not, but probably.
Carl, who knows?
Emperor Giorgio.
Yeah, Carl's like, oh, in one universe, you're bleeding out on the floor, but you're here. It's fine.
It's fine.
And like, I'm unclear on whether that they've just changed the history of the Terran universe by doing that or not. I don't know.
I think so. Carl says that in another kind of Doctor Who-y thing, that there's a multiverse of, there are multiple versions of all of us, and one version of you is bleeding out on that floor, and the other version, this version is here, so let's just concentrate on this version.
Yeah, and it doesn't really matter whether that, there are two mirror universes, one that went the one way and one that went the other way or not. It doesn't matter. It doesn't.
No.
It's not.
And I got a little shades of Mirror Mirror, when, because Giorgio basically says to Saru, hey, you know, the thing, you're the cull, you don't need to be culled, you can, you can survive it, which I thought was very nice.
That was so great. Then, that was, because she's not just like, Vahari is a joke, and just lock yourself in a room somewhere and you'll be fine. In fact, you'll be better. And you should tell your friends too. And that is a great Doug Jones moment, because he's playing this butler version of Saru. Mm-hmm. And you see him, like, she's like, I just gave you a great piece of information for tactical use, and you can really use this to further your people. And he's like, all my family died because of this stupid thing that's not real? Like, he reads it in a completely opposite and totally valid way that she isn't really reading it. And she's like, no, but it's an opportunity. And he's like, but... And then his response to her is, you are not Terran. They will kill you, which is so great, because like that's the moment where it's Saru who says, you may think of yourself as a Terran, but you are not. You are not acting like one, and they are going to get you, because you are like, you are showing mercy, and
these people are not nice.
Yeah, and that is my favorite moment, maybe other than the Guardian of Forever, I guess, in this whole episode, is that Saru saying, something is really wrong here. And then obviously he locks himself away in that room and then is throwing people around. Because I love that when Saru is suddenly amazingly violent because he's so strong. It's great.
It is fantastic. And that reminded me, well, of course, Mirror Mirror introduces the Mirror Universe. So all of this reminded me of that clearly. But in that episode, Spock at the end, evil Spock, is trying to change the universe, and because he's learned a valuable lesson. And I feel like Saru has learned a valuable lesson and has been given some, you know, knowledge that he then uses, and Carl tells us that Saru has saved many other people in that universe. So.
Right. Presumably that has started some sort of a schism or a revolt or something, that the Kelpians now know this secret information about them. And that's great. Of course, I think, was it Deep Space Nine that established that Spock took over the Terran Empire and basically caused it to crumble through his reforms. Yes. He was a Gorbachev kind of figure.
He failed miserably, according to the canon. But he tried.
But he tried. And he was doing the right thing, which is just a crappy universe and you don't want to be in it. That's exactly the answer there.
It's a dumb universe, as we've established. And they make poor choices.
You don't want to be there. I wanted to shout out the alternate versions of the Discovery crew that are in this episode. Mm-hmm. Detmer gets some good moments. We see Landry again, who they killed off twice because there was two versions of her. We see her again and they basically kill her a third time, which is like, wow, good job, lady. But Bryce is taken out. Sure. And then Arium was in the last episode, but is name checked in this episode, which is also fun. That this is a human version of Arium, and it's the actress who played Arium the second time, because the actress who played Arium the first time is also playing her new character in both universes. It's very complicated. It's Star Trek.
It's very complicated.
You know, there's lots of things going on there, but there's a lot of fun stuff there, and you know, it escalates. Oh, we get Killy, right? Like, Killy's the great interrogator, and she gets to be kind of vicious, and all that is fun. But, like, it escalates back to what you knew was going to happen, which is that all of a sudden Giorgio has the sword out again with Michael, like she did with our Michael, and like she did last week with this Michael. And this time she runs her through with the sword. So in the end, she realizes this is her failure, is that she can't actually change this.
No, but yeah, and there are some very good scenes when I really like the when Michael Burnham was asleep and Georgiou came in with her Firefly globe, which I guess you replicate or something.
I don't know.
Don't think about where those Fireflies came from, but enjoy the scene.
They're
because
robots.
It's very well acted and very touching.
Just
and
trying to make
more depth.
A connection. The note I had about all of that is that I don't think too hard about how the Terran universe works, because she talks about like raising her, and I'm like, I don't know if anything we know about the Terran universe could explain having a normal parental relationship with anyone, like especially if you're in the Empire. Like, I don't know, she's like, oh well, and you sleepwalked and there were Fireflies and all that, and I'm like, is that happening in the Terran with the Emperor
on the Georgiou compound?
Maybe in the palace, and there's slaves all around who are being horribly agonized, but they have their nice moment with the Fireflies. Exactly. Maybe so.
The agonizers attract Fireflies.
It's just, I had that moment where I thought, I think the Terran universe, the mirror universe, is one where let's not think too hard about how like regular life works, because I'm not sure that works.
I mean, I think that in Star Trek in general, it's not very wise to think about how regular life works. And then in the mirror universe, it's an even worse idea because it doesn't make a lot of sense.
That's fair.
But it's fun to visit, which is what we do. And so is there anything else you want to talk about from the mirror universe? Because we also have to talk about what happens to kind of set up the rest of the season.
The only other note that I have that I wanted to mention is that apparently Ryza is not a tourist destination in the mirror universe, because they go there and there's the guy Duggan in the shuttlecraft who feels very much like they couldn't get Jason Isaacs back.
Yeah.
And
the only person there.
And they say something like there's no other warp capable ships within 100 light years. And I'm like, well, that is not a tourist destination then, is it?
No. Leave your Horgons or whatever.
Yeah, there's no Horgons on Risa in the mirror universe. It's the worst. It's probably like, instead of the sex planet, it's probably like the, I don't know, vomit planet or something. It's bad. It's a bad planet. No one wants to go to. It's literally the mirror of Risa. Just stay away.
Vomit planet.
It smells funny.
It's not good.
You get diseases. Well, okay, you get diseases if you go to Risa, presumably. So, okay,
different kinds.
It's less delightful of a place, clearly, in the mirror universe.
Yes.
That's all I got.
And now, hey, Jason, do you remember that there's some kind of ship in a nebula or something?
Oh, yeah, with Kelpians on
with
board,
Kelpians,
apparently.
And then sending a distress signal and our friends on Discovery, as all of this is happening in a minute on the planet where the Guardian of Forever is. Have been looking. Oh, I guess we should say Georgiou comes back and Michael Burnham says, oh no, you were only unconscious for a minute. And she says, WTF. It was
3 months passed. She does that contact thing where she looks at the log of her little bracelet and says, "Proof, I was really gone for 3 months."
Hubba what? And that's when we find out he's the Guardian of Forever. Yeah. And then Georgiou jumps through the Guardian of Forever and off to her show.
That is, that's how it ends. She says goodbye and jumps into the donut, and that's the end. I thought you were going to mention the but I was there for months. I am the Guardian of Forever. What? Cut to Jet Reno is eating in the engineering room.
I did think that was a surprising cut. I was like, what?
What? Like, okay, now Tig Notaro is having some licorice.
All right, and, I guess I have to find out what's happening with these jerks.
With these folks, because you shouldn't be eating in this
chamber. I just want to know what's happening.
Shouldn't.
Candy doesn't count, though. Everybody knows that.
I guess.
And yes, they need to amplify some sensors to read the distress signal for some. Or no, they're not trying to read distress signal anymore. They're hacking into the sensors.
Yes, they're using the prefix code.
Yes, to see what's on that ship.
Yeah.
And it turns out Book is still around. Hooray. And he has some forbidden technology from the Emerald Chain that can help. Because you basically have a subspace booster. And nobody on the ship knew about that.
Right.
But he has one. And so he hooks it up to the console. Well, really, he just rests it next to the console.
Yeah,
I guess
it's wireless.
In the future, it's fine.
NFC, something like, yeah.
And it solves a problem. Stamets can't say thank you. So there's a funny little line there. Mm-hmm. And they find out that, I forget what they find out. Like someone's alive on the ship or something.
I don't know. There's more information given, and they need to go see what's going on there. And they call up the Admiral, which I wanted to talk about because this was a thing we were speculating on today. The Admiral, Odedfair, is like, they're using Emerald Chain technology. I don't like that. And it's like, well, it's better than your technology. Why? I think he's like, they use it to hack into our systems or something. And Book says, I checked it out. I put it in my system like 2 or 3 years ago. It's fine. Like I installed it. I checked it out. It's good. It's good.
And he's all right.
But I think it's funny because I really like Odedfair, and I think he does a good job with this character. I find the character perplexing because he just keeps going back and forth. He's like the parent that is never satisfied. Like, you want to please him, and he won't be so happy with you.
No, he quickly changes his mind. No, he's like, oh, no, don't use this Emerald Chain stuff. And then they say, well, no, it's fine. He's like, okay, you can retroactively use it, but ask me before you use it again.
Yeah, just under, I'm raising my eyebrow at you. And what I find, I like the actor, and what I don't want is for him to turn out to be bad or in league with the Emerald Chain in some way.
Yes, no.
And for the Federation to be found to be corrupt or something like that. I really want it to be a little simpler than that, where they found the Federation and they're just trying their best and all of that. And I find like every now and then they do this character work with the Admiral's character where I can't decide whether it's legitimate character work or whether it is them trying to make you not assume that he's the bad guy that he obviously is. Mm-hmm. And I can't decide which one it is, which I guess it sort of works because I'm not entirely sure that he's going to turn out to be bad, but I'm thinking that maybe he is. And I don't want him to be. That's the thing. That's a twist I don't want is to be like to come. We came to the future and it turns out that the Federation sucks. What are we going to do now?
Oh, no. Yeah. I mean, they are, what is it? Georgiou says that your universe at this point is more Terran than ever before. So be on the lookout, Michael, before she, jumps through the portal to her new home and, show. And so I hope that's not a weak hint that yes, he is up to no good because I don't want that Admiral to be bad.
Yeah.
And I will say, just in case he is bad and I, in a future episode, say I like it, they could do it in such a way that I would find it satisfying. But at this moment, I just don't really think it's necessary.
Yeah, I think what I would say is I would be okay if it turns out that he disappoints them, right? Like he isn't upholding the ideals, that he has made a calculated political move to keep the Emerald Chain around because it benefits keeping the Federation alive in some way. And they're like, oh, but you should be more idealistic than that, jerk. And he's like, I can't afford to be. and that it ends up being kind of this sad, disappointing, like, we thought they were bad and we would stop them, and it turns out they're bad, but we don't want to stop them because we benefit from having them still exist. That I could get behind, right? That's a very modern sentiment of...
It's complicated.
Yeah, that it's complicated, and we've gotten that from them. I just don't want to be one of those moments of like, he's working with the Emerald Chain.
He is that person that they keep talking about. I forget her name.
Yeah. They're working on this together. No, dun, dun, right? Dun. That's what I don't want.
No.
So we'll see what that is.
Hopefully,
but I would be okay if he was a little bit compromised, and it turns out that the idealism that Discovery has, that's part of why they're there, is to reinvigorate the Federation with idealism, and that he regrets maybe the morally gray decisions he's made because, you know, he felt he needed to, but they haven't lived up to the ideals of the Federation. I'm all for that, for him being a compromised character. I just don't want him to be a baddie.
I agree. And that there's a scene with him and Saru where he basically says, WTF Saru, how come you didn't tell me about this sooner? And then kind of insinuate, or I forget the exact line, but he basically says, you and Michael Burnham make some interesting choices that are outside the boundaries of the rules.
He gives Saru an opportunity to basically like fib about why he did it. He's like, yeah, I just admit that you saw some Kelpians and you felt bad. And he's like, no, that is not why I did it. I love that from Saru. He's like, no, that's not it.
I'd like to see the Kelpians, but that's not why I did it.
No, that was, yeah. So I don't know what's going on with that. I think if I have a complaint about this two-part episode, it is that it is a clear digression, and it's funny because you get the sort of first segment of part one and the last segment of part two where they're doing everything they can to drag the story arc forward. And then there's the middle part, which is the character bit with Giorgio, which is good, but has nothing to do with the story arc. Which I don't know, that is actually a really good illustration of the struggle I think sometimes that Discovery has with storytelling. There was a tweet I got earlier this week from listener David, who wrote in to ask about how we feel about episodic versus season arc on Discovery. And he mentioned Doctor Who, and he said, like, Discovery strikes a balance, and Doctor Who is paying lip service to its arcs while it's doing standalone. I actually feel a little bit of the reverse, which is sometimes I feel like Discovery is too arc focused, and that like there's no shame in having a story that's a standalone story that maybe has a little tiny bit that pushes forward the arc. And in these two parts, I feel like you really see that, where the story they want to tell is about Giorgio and Burnham, and yet they have to pack like two acts, one at the beginning of part one and one at the end of part two, with just spinning the plates about pushing the season arc forward. And like, I get it, and it's fine, but it feels like they're so desperate to push the season arc forward. And I don't know, maybe it's just growing up on original Star Trek where they didn't have season arcs. I like story arcs, right? But does every episode have to push the arc forward as much as Discovery does it? I don't know.
I guess they don't want people to forget about it. But it seems strange. Like I could have done without the last 10 minutes of this episode.
Yeah.
I think I would have ended it with, you know, Burnham comes back, reports what happens. Maybe they tell, they decode the message, and then they have the thing,
toast Giorgio, because this episode's about Giorgio. It's not really about the ship in the nebula, right? Like, I feel like we could have talked about the ship in the nebula last week or 2 weeks ago and then done this and then moved on. But
maybe
instead,
just mention the ship in the nebula,
they got to keep sticking it in there. I don't know. I that's my biggest complaint, honestly. The reason I brought this up, and thank you to listener David for writing it, because I've been thinking for a while now, I actually think Discovery's biggest weakness is that they're too adherent on the story arc. And they want to have their cake and eat it too. They want to have standalone episodes that feel Star Trek-y. And I think this season they've done a pretty good job of that. But they also want it to be like a modern TV show that is completely serialized. And it isn't. You can't do both of those. Either this, you need your season to be one big 13-episode movie, basically, where everything is kind of like connected to the main story. or you need to have the ability to step back and say, not every episode is about the arc. The arc is very light. It will get we'll get there at the end of the season. We'll have some points in the season where the arc will move forward, but it's not going to be so heavy. I actually think Doctor Who does a better job of that. And maybe that's just because I like standalone episodes and I do like arcs, but what I don't want from my Doctor Who or really my Star Trek is something that is only about the arc. I feel like it's a missed opportunity to tell great Star Trek stories if everything has to advance the arc. Or if you advance the arc, advance it in a clever way where like the episode where they go to the seed bank, right? Where it's like that advances the arc, but it's also a weird episode where they go to a seed bank, right? And
this feels very tacked on.
Yeah, that felt integral to the story. This feels tacked on. And I think that's just a way where I appreciate the degree of difficulty is high here. You're trying to write off a character, you know, and set up a spinoff. And like, I get it, but they're straining here, I feel like, in a way that you can see them straining, and I think they're trying a little too hard, honestly.
Yeah, and for this pair of episodes, they clearly made the decision, which I think is the right decision, that once Georgiou goes through the Guardian of Forever, like, we just stay with her.
Yes.
And we don't jump back.
Yeah, I was relieved by that. Yeah. Well, I mean, they want her to have only been gone for a minute, so they can't cut back. But it's right. Like, yes, that's good. That's good. Don't cut back, because that's not what this episode is about.
Mm-hmm. But then they're like, oh, no, we still need to figure yeah. We have to do something with this ship in the nebula. So that's right. Let's just add this at the end.
We just introduced the Guardian of Forever, but let's visit Reno while she eats some licorice in the spore chamber. Let's do that.
So yes, I will. I agree with you about this particular episode that that was the weakest point, and I do also think that it is Discovery's weakest point. Is their need to be like, remember the Red Angel? It's still a thing.
Yeah.
Remember that nebula with the ship in it? It's still there. Don't forget. Remember this admiral who may or may not be good. He still may or may not be good.
Yeah, I think the thing that made me twig on this from listener David's tweet was basically. Mentioning Doctor Who, like Doctor Who, it's very obvious what they do. It's like in the first episode, they set up a little problem. And in the middle of the season, there's like an episode where you're like, oh, it's that problem. And then like in the last two episodes of the season, they're like, let's deal with the problem. And mm-hmm. otherwise, it's sort of not part of it. And I get that's kind of formulaic. It's also, though, you know, it's okay. Like, because you don't know when the moments that the arc is going to be advanced are coming. When they happen, you're like, aha! Ongoing mystery. We got a new clue. Mm-hmm. It's exciting. And then and then there's something to kind of drag you through the season and get resolved. And the mixture on Discovery just feels a little bit off. Like it's a little bit too much about that arc. And they're trying, like, I enjoyed season two of Discovery, but honestly, in hindsight, I think less of it, mostly because now I see that it was really all just sort of there to get them to the future. And it feels like I don't want my season of Star Trek to just be, let's get the characters from point A to point B. That's not what mm-hmm. I want. And I'm not sure they're doing it as artfully as I would like, which is not to say I'm not enjoying the season. I still think it's the best season of Discovery, but it is a fascinating thing to see them try to balance the perceived needs of modern streaming service storytelling with what Star Trek feels like. It's a tough one. I as critical as I can be of them, I also want to acknowledge that this is not easy stuff. They had so much they had to do in this two-part episode, and you know, the seams show, and maybe it's not surprising that they do.
No, I mean, I think it's an accomplishment that it is as good as it is.
I agree.
Given what they needed to do with these two-part mm-hmm. episode. And there are only three episodes left, so ooh. I'm assuming the next three episodes will be all about that ship in the nebula.
Yeah.
Further reason, in my opinion, that you didn't really need to talk about it that much in Terra Firma Part 2.
Yeah, but the burn, the ship in the nebula, mm-hmm. how the Admiral is apparently responsible for all of it or something.
Oh, boy.
He's got
a flickering hologram. I don't know what's up with that. They need to fix their holograms.
You got a little bump the antenna, like hit it with your fist a little bit, like bump, like the Fonz in Happy Days. Like,
oh,
boom.
That's right. Hey, that's a hey. Saru. I always think of Saru as the Fonz. So.
He is. Yeah, he's our Fonz.
That's right.
He is. Sit on it. Arium. No, she's dead. Who would it be? Who would if Saru's the Fonz, who does he say to sit on it? Who's Potsy? Who's the Potsy?
Oh, who's the Potsy of Discovery? Oh man, that is a question.
It's Bryce.
Yes, that is true.
Sit on it, Bryce.